Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. They have great podcasts you should go listen to, but they also have great technology that can help your business. The big reason why more than 300 of last year's unicorn startups use HubSpot is because there is no other software that keeps you better connected with your teams and your customers so you can crush all your business, sales, revenue, marketing goals. The new HubSpot Sales Hub brings you that power of an easy-to-use platform designed for today's top entrepreneurs, today's top sales teams. With 360-degree deal management and real-time reporting, you get accurate windows into every inch of your business. And with AI-powered tools like their new ChatSpot, you'll have a dedicated assistant that knows your business inside and out. ChatSpot enables your team with one-stop access to a ton of time-saving functions like pulling data, tracking calls, managing leads, scheduling emails. So trade cold calls for warm leads, because when it comes to scaling sales, your software should be smart. And the solutions should be simple. Get on track for your best Q1 yet. Check out HubSpot Sales Hub at HubSpot.com/sales. Pick a point in your life. It could be when you were growing up. It could be when, you know, you're going to college, university, or maybe in your career. What was the point that pushed you down the path that you're on right now? What was that pivotal moment? And we can go from there. So think about that, and then we'll take it away. Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
Go ahead. What is that point?
Well, there are two, actually. So sorry.
No. It's fine.
but the first one was actually when I was failing college. I dropped out of university, basically. And I was sort of failing college miserably. And of course, I was a bartender instead of going to university. And I was having a lot of fun. And while I was having fun, one day, one friend of mine, Francois, came to me and said, "Hey, you know, I've got these guys." He actually did proper studies and he actually had a good job with Silicon Graphics at the time. Yeah. And he was like, "Hey," it was in 2000. And in 2000, he said to me, "Yeah, I've got these guys, they're leaving Silicon Graphics and they're going to build a startup." Like, it was a dot-com boom, you know. And so he said, "Do you want to interview for a job?" And I was desperate for a job. Like, no one wanted to hire me. And so I went and I got my first job. And this is, you know, why I'm here today, sort of. And the second inflection point was when my son was born. So that was in 2005. And that gets you really hungry for success.
Well, yeah, because now you have someone else who relies on you.
Yes.
What did that push you to do in your career? Like, when your son was obviously successful before your son was born, but what did that push you to do? Did it push you, like, work harder? Was it focus more on something that you really knew you had to accomplish? Like, what was that thing? What was that drive that it unlocked?
Work harder, for sure. It's actually something quite primal. Yeah. You know, my wife always complained that, you know, the day I was born, like, the only thing that I wanted to do was to go out of the house and work more. And I think it happens to a lot of men where it is actually mistaken for you trying to leave the nest because you don't want to deal with the burden. But it actually, I think it is you trying to go out and sort of hunt more,
yeah,
to protect the family, something like that. And so I had that strong feeling that sort of pushed me outside. And so that was number one. And number two, it's also in the end, like, you know, sort of working so to make sure that my son would look up to me, and so not to disappoint him,
yeah,
became something that was more important than not to disappoint my parents.
That's funny. That's very interesting how the focus shifts, right? Because I think that when you're coming up in your career, you know, if you have a healthy relationship with your parents, it is for a time where you actually don't want to screw up.
Yeah.
And then you start to be successful. And then for some people that are very entrepreneurial, or some people that build big things, you start to outpace what your parents ever expected of you. So then you're trying to wonder, like, at some point, like, what's the purpose anymore? Like, who are you doing this for? I don't have kids yet. Mm. But I think that that's actually a really important thing. You build something bigger than yourself, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the story goes like this. So I did a successful business in advertising. And that gave me access to a lot of liquidity and a lot of, you know, I can go to the beach for the rest of my life type, yeah, of money. And so the question is, like, why do you work? And there were a few answers, but, like, you know, one is because I like it. But two also is because, you know, I didn't want my son to see me. And I was
How old
late,
were you?
Late 30s.
Late 30s.
Early 40s.
And you had FU money in late 30s after the exit.
After 2013, yeah. So 10 years ago, so I was 37.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, okay, is my son going, you know, every day then when he's going to come home, I'm going to be home and, you know, play the PlayStation. I don't know, like do something. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Like you can have other passions than just working, and that's all good and well. And if I had had those passions, I would have focused on these, but, you know, achieve something, like sort of do something. I'm really good at working. So, and I love working. So I just focus on that.
Because you go so hard for so long, especially when you are a high performer, right? So when you built, so that company, which company was that? That was
Criteo.
Criteo. So that company, it IPO'd in 2013.
Yes, correct. Nasdaq. Okay.
So when you go that hard for so long, and I've actually noticed this with a lot of people that have had a big exit event, there's a lot of questioning what's next.
Yes.
And questioning, you know, what is your purpose in the world? And I'm actually curious, you know, now you have a child, you don't have to work again, but you know you want to do something. So what led you to Ledger at the end of the day? What was the thing that got you out of bed in the morning? Because that's a total 180 from your background as well.
Oh yeah, well, first of all, because I have no background, but you know, but also advertising for sure. And so no, it was a few things. So one, I wanted to do something. Two, I wanted to do something that was bigger than Criteo. It was sort of
bigger than a public company.
Yeah, it's just $2 billion, you know, valuation. And once you start to compete, like, you know, you want to play the Champions League. That's very clear. And so one of the things that was very frustrating when we're building this advertising business is that we always find, like, Google, Amazon, Facebook, etc., that were bigger advertising companies. And so therefore the game was a little rigged. Like there's no way that, you know, Criteo would be bigger than these companies. And so therefore I thought, okay, so what is the company, or what is the where can I play where there is fair competition? And actually finding Bitcoin in 2014 was sort of that revelation. It's like, oh, okay, these are new protocols. And so it's not the web protocol, it's something different. And so therefore now it's exchange of value, et cetera. And so it changes everything. And actually 10 years later, almost, you can see that none of the big guys have really moved into crypto yet. The Google, the Amazon of the world, et cetera. They're starting to touch it a little bit, but 10 years after, they haven't really touched it.
Well, they mess around with their own internal protocols.
Correct.
Like you have IBM that messes around with their own internal protocol. Yes. But ultimately, you still have a lot of independent companies that are still trying to build the biggest and the best and the most user-friendly and the best user experience for crypto, for Bitcoin, for everything, right? So it's actually interesting to me because, you know, you don't realize how long it's been. Mm-hmm. You don't realize that 2014, okay, that was
a long time ago.
But we're still, with crypto, we still haven't gotten to the point where someone's grandmother can use it easily. Like, no. I know you, like, you speak a lot about, you know, if they're not, it's not your keys, not your crypto, right? You have to have your own keys. The user experience in the industry is still complex. And it's getting more complex. I mean, now you add on NFTs, you add on DeFi, you add on things that are even another layer. So where have you seen us sort of grow over the past 10 years, and what's left to do? How do we sort of make it so that there is that, you know, that peak user adoption that we actually want to see?
Okay, first I'll give you a little teaser. It is complex, but it's not as complex as we say it is, and I explain why.
Okay.
But I don't know, in the past 10 years, like 2014 was nuclear winter. Like, honestly, being in crypto then was, you know, very interesting because you would meet extraordinary people, but very hard from a business standpoint. It was very hard to understand, you know, where this would go, what would be the business, et cetera, et cetera. And very few people engaged. Very hard to recruit people. Like in 2014, I remember trying to recruit for my first company, Kaiko, which is a data company that is doing really well today under the stewardship of Ambre Soubiran. Impossible to recruit people, when today is very easy. Like, you know, today Web3, crypto, whatever it is very attractive for talent. And so to recruit talent is much easier than when it was in 14. And there has been wave of innovation. I think, you know, to access the market, the exchange was like first, and then in 2017, I think there was another wave of, like, you know, custodian and custody technology. There was like sort of that wave because, you know, suddenly you had a lot of crypto, but you didn't know where to put it. And so, you know, we had to work hard. And part of this is self-custody and what Ledger does in terms of hardware wallet. But if you think about it, like, Ledger was only launched in, you know, end 14, beginning 15. And, you know, the first heat product that we had in the market was 2016 with the Nano S. Mm-hmm. And so that's to put things in perspective. Nano X was 2018.
That's very recent still, actually.
It is very recent. And Stax now is going to be 23. And, you know, so from 14 to 23, almost 10 years, we could only take three or four products to market, depending on how you count. There's the S Plus that also came out last year, but which is just a revamp of the S.
But it's interesting, though, that Ledger is still leading the way in hardware. And I've heard you on a few podcasts before speak about how crypto and DeFi and blockchain, so much software innovation, but not as much hardware innovation.
Now, there is a lot of hardware innovation, but the problem is hardware is slow. Hardware is very slow. So typically from the moment you think about building a product to when the product is going to be in market, there is something like 2 to 3 years. And if you become really good like Apple, it's 1 year cycle. But it's very hard to take products to market. Like, it's really hard to build something, et cetera. And, you know, and it, with hardware also, you can't really fuck it up.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Once it's built, it's built.
Yeah.
And so
you can't recall all that. You can't push an update.
I mean, you can. But if you do, then your company is dead, you know. So you have to be very, very extremely careful. So typically to launch Stax, you know, there is some frustration now from people that say, hey, when are you guys going to launch? You announced in December and now, you know, it's April, et cetera. So it is true that relate, but the complexity of building a product like Stax is, you know, really crazy. And also, we want to make sure that when we launch, it's perfect or close to perfect.
It has to be perfect.
Yes.
It has to be, because if, again, you aren't the size of Apple.
Yes.
So if you screw it up, that's not...
But it's not even perfect like that. I think we won't screw it up, to be honest, but perfect in the sense that, you know, this is the work of precision. Like, you know, the hardware needs to work. The operating system needs to be flawless into the hardware. That needs to connect beautifully to the software. When we launch, the software needs to be on par with other products, etc. So there is a certain complexity. And also now the hardware can be used and be paired with like so many other wallets in the space. It's not just Ledger and Ledger Live. It's, you know, Ledger and MetaMask, Ledger and Coinbase Wallet, etc., etc. And, you know, the industries and users are always asking for more. So I would say that was the wave, like, you know, the custody wave in 17. And now, you know, 2021 was the wave of, you know, applications to run on blockchains, you know, the, you know, sort of DeFi, NFT, et cetera, et cetera. So these have been like the three successive waves, and there'd be so much more to say about this, but this is how I would go very quickly on this. And what did I say when I said, I'll tell you at the end.
I think we were talking about the problems with hardware.
No.
Oh, I can't remember what you're getting back to. No, I have a follow-up though. It doesn't matter. I have a follow-up.
I remember.
We'll get back to it. This is my problem, because I when I get interested about something, I ask these like multi-point questions and then I'm getting lost. It's fine. But so I guess the biggest responsibility you have is that you're leading the way. Like you are building bleeding edge technology. And you are.
Oh wait, easy to use, not easy to use. I got it. I gotta say.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Then I have a follow up. Go.
Okay, so we always say like it's not very easy to use.
Yes.
Okay, so now forget Web3, crypto, Bitcoin, however you call it, blockchain technology. Now just focus on Web2 today.
Yeah.
Is it very easy to connect to your bank? I mean, you know, I know mine is like super hard. I've got codes everywhere. I got shit I need to remember.
Yeah.
If it's a banking account in the UK, I mean, honestly, it's so hard to use. I've been shut down from I was with HSBC. I mean, actually, I'm no longer with HSBC, but in the UK, when these guys shut you down from the web because you've done like the wrong manip or whatever, like, you know, you press two times on the same button that you shouldn't have. Oh my God, like to get back online.
I know.
Crazy.
So you're not wrong. You're not. So actually thinking through that point, even now, so I have TD, I'm Canadian.
Okay.
I have TD and I have a Toronto number hooked up as my 2FA, which I don't have access to anymore because now I have my American number. And the amount of shit that they gave me to switch my 2FA phone number from a Toronto number to an American number, to a Florida number, is insane.
Exactly.
And then I think one out of every three purchases, because I'm a Canadian down in the US, is a fraud alert. And they're sending little notifications to a phone number that doesn't exist anymore saying, hey, is this you? Mm-hmm. So it's not
So super convenient. It is sometimes not super convenient. And actually, if you think about like all these apps now that ask you for 2FA,
yeah.
I mean, look at it, to connect to an exchange, crypto exchange, you know, this is not Web3. It's just like, you know, an interface and you place your bids, etc. This is 100% Web2. You need 2FA to connect to anything now, because otherwise login password is not enough. Yeah. Like, you know, everyone is big companies are moving towards FIDO2 in terms of knowing who you are, etc. So actually there is like a very complex layer of security that comes on top of the web, whether you want it or not. And that makes things less easy for users. But, you know, users are, you know, deal with this. The reason why they didn't deal with this so much in Web2 is because everybody agrees that your phone and your computers are broken. You keep on patching them. They're like, sorry, it was open. Please patch it. Okay. And everybody understand, you understand, everybody understand in this podcast that for Web3 and crypto and Bitcoin, it's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
If it's open, you know, by the time that you patch it, maybe the Bitcoins are gone. For your email and many other things where you have a lot of insurance, like your bank, etc. Okay, maybe sometime the money is gone, but you call your bank and, you know, you got an insurance for this, you know, if you're lucky. Sometimes you don't. But for Bitcoin, like, there's no insurance yet. And so once it's gone, it's gone. And so security has to be very different. But I would say, you know, using my ledger every day, I don't think it's more complex than using my bank account, actually, to be honest.
So do you feel like it's perceived difficult, like incorrectly perceived difficulty of somebody trying to learn something new?
Yeah, there is a, it's funny because when I look at myself in the mirror, I don't recognize myself, because when I think about myself, I always remember myself when I was 18.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have the same problem.
Sometimes, yeah.
And I changed a lot. And so I think the same is happening with crypto. There's a bunch of people that came into crypto in like 15, 16, 17, 18, whatever. And they don't actually touch their coins much. And so for them, like, you know, the, you know, crypto is still where it was way back when. I even have like the CEO of one of the major companies writing to me the other day and saying, before we launched Stacks, just to give context, but just before we launched Stacks, and so some maybe in 2021, to say, hey, congratulations on your new product. And I was like, what new product? And he was referring to the Nano X that we launched in 2018. So even someone that works in the industry and, you know, understand very well the problem of security, etc., was not aware that we had a new product after the Nano S that we launched in 16. So you would say, okay, but then you sucked at marketing then, which probably was the case. But equally, you know, there is, you know, resilience in people's mind in the space, and they always make the same comment. But I would argue that typically Ledger is 100,000 times easier to use in 23 than what it was in 17.
Do you find that, because you're sort of boots on the ground, so I don't want to make assumptions, but do you find that more people are still keeping their crypto on the in the spot where they bought it? Or do you see user adoption to hardware, people understanding security better?
No, we've seen people understand money, so, and they don't want to lose their money. So now after a lot of people lose money. But after FTX, it's like, you know, when you burn yourself and you know not to touch the flame anymore. So FTX was the big earthquake, I think, much bigger than, you know, Mt. Gox or, you know, all of the things that happened in the past. And by the way, they keep on happening and they will keep on happening. You know, FTX was not the last. The same way that Lehman Brothers was not too big to fail. Like, you know, it's like, why would you trust a central authority with your money? Exchanges are very useful. Like, you know, you should use them to do the trade, but like, you should never leave your coins on an exchange. And so I think people understand that. And we've seen this in our numbers. Like, it was, you know, a hard way to learn, but it was a way. And
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins. And I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there, and maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay, and what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real, there are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professionals to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success.
And you see it in the coins moving from exchanges to sort of somewhere else. And we see a lot of coins moving to our platform. And then we see a lot more people now are engaging with the services that we have in Ledger Lives, especially the buy, the sell, and the swap services. Mm-hmm. The numbers are, you know, very impressive year on year, like, you know, triple digit growth, and very constantly in Q1, continuing in Q2, when the market is not, definitely not doing a triple digit growth.
Not at all. Yeah. So you see, you're not even taking over people that are like very, very adamant crypto users. You still are, you're bringing people in, yes, who have never used crypto before, even in a...
On the transaction thing, what I'm describing is more like our user base now understand that they can do more with Ledger than just store the crypto, and they prefer to do the trades from their Ledger rather than from the exchange.
Understood. So they keep it in the ecosystem.
Correct.
But do you also see people, like, do you still see, of course, the industry is not growing at triple digit growth, but do you all see people that are entering crypto with Ledger versus entering crypto with Coinbase and keeping things on Coinbase?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And actually, more and more, like, well, first of all, before in 17, it was not possible. So yes, you had to do Coinbase first and then Ledger second. In 23, now, first of all, it's not just cryptocurrencies, but it's also NFTs. So sometimes you enter through an NFT and not really through crypto. You can go on OpenSea, take your credit to debit card, you know, MoonPay is providing the service, and then you buy your NFT. And then you have to put it somewhere. And actually, through the payment service, MoonPay will ask you where do you want to put it. And so it could be on your MetaMask, could be on your Ledger, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yes, more and more. Actually, what we've seen in 22, when everybody was saying it was a bear market, we saw that Sure, and certain things, you know, certain things were not flying as high as they would have had in the past, but other things like, you know, the NFT business and those communities being built around those projects kept on growing. And so that brought a lot of people in, that brought a lot of ledgers.
And what do you, you know, now, again, you see people that are older crypto users as well as new crypto users using Ledger for all the transactions they want to take care of. What do you think is the key to user adoption? Do you think that there is, unfortunately, the requirement for more FTX type things that, and actually not user adoption, sorry, that would be migrating people over that are already crypto users, but let's say bringing new people in. So FTX pushes people away that have never touched crypto. It makes them scared. They say, oh, thank goodness I never bought any crypto because look at what just happened. But what on the flip side of that, what is the key to user adoption?
Okay, but first, I think so far, everybody got it wrong to think that speculation over coins was actually crypto. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is not crypto. To speculate on FTT, on FTX, that's like the worst of financial speculation, I guess.
Yeah.
And if to you crypto is just like buying an Apple stock, I mean, you know, sure, like you can do that, but I don't think it's the use case for crypto. And mm-hmm. by the way, like, you know, the token only has value if you bring security to the blockchain, and if the blockchain has a vibrant ecosystem of developers, companies, applications, etc., that are built on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I think that the even the market that is just taking care of speculation, like, you know, they're not looking, you know, sort of deep enough into the protocols, etc. And you have like, and it's difficult because you had so many like meme coins that have like sort of no value, but it's just like people pumping and dumping the market, that it makes that whole speculation aspect of crypto a bit ridiculous, if you want my honest point of view. I think where crypto is interesting is if it's in self-custody, because this is why and how it has been designed. Like, you know, if you still leave your crypto at a bank, again, sure, but why? There are other things that you can invest in that are probably good investments. So the interesting thing is like, what can you do with your private keys, and how can you engage in, you know, products that are interesting? Like DeFi is one good example. If you don't have your private keys, you cannot engage in DeFi. We always overlook payment as if it's a given, but I still think that store value and payment with Bitcoin or Lightning or payment in general with crypto is the killer app. I mean, you have like a peer-to-peer global payment network.
It's interesting how no one focuses on that as much as they should, because that was the original white paper, right? Yeah.
And this is where it's amazing. Like, you know, to pay anything for me in the US with my European credit cards, mm-hmm. oh my God, like it's so difficult. It's very difficult. Like, it depends what you want to pay, etc. I mean, if you live on, you know, $5 a day, I guess you're good. But like, if you have to go to hotels, you're entertaining, mm-hmm. You know, your customers because you have a business dinner where suddenly 10 people come, you know, that has a cost, etc. And if you start to use your credit cards, like you max them out, like, you know, the one after the other, etc. And so, and the fees that you pay, like every time that you go to the ATM in the US, like it's like $4 to get $100 out. That's ridiculous. And so, yes, payment with crypto is a huge case, you know. And if you think that Bitcoin is too volatile, okay, fine. So do it in stablecoins.
Mm-hmm. And like I think that's what people actually have to. That's a really good point. So people that are scared of crypto because of FTX, FTT, or anything else, you're right. It's because they're focusing on the wrong thing. Because I think too many people tried to gamble on it for a long period of time, and they realized that, oh, it actually is volatile. It doesn't just go one way. It can go both ways.
No, I mean, it's like going to the casino and be like, fuck, you know, I got wrecked. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, that's how casinos work.
Yes, that's the casino. That's not a good behavior. You shouldn't, you know, when I got into crypto, the theory was to say you only invest in crypto what you can lose. Mm-hmm. And then you're long, like you wait. Like, you know, it is not like coming in and out. And people that are trying to buy low, sell high, you know, sure. Like, everybody would love to be able to time the market, but like, it doesn't work like that.
How do you balance, when you're building this hardware product, how do you balance security and usability? Because you're attracting, again, the most complex users that want the most complex features, as well as someone's parents that just are starting it for the first time.
Okay, so first of all, I don't think we're building technology for parents or grandparents. Sorry to break the news to the parents and grandparents that are using this podcast, but we are building technology for the younger generation. You know, I think if Bitcoin and crypto have to become what they ought to become, mm-hmm. you know, it will be for the younger generation. I remember when I was a kid, we switched francs from the old francs to the new francs, and it was a division of 1,000, I think. A division of 100, something like that. 1,000 ancient francs were suddenly 10 new francs. And I remember my grandmother never being able to, actually it's not true, my grandmother did the switch, but her sister never did the switch. So she would always talk to me in the old denomination, etc., which always I always felt that it was going to be super rich, but actually, you know, I had to do the math and, you know, the division in my head, and in the end I was not that rich. And so my point is, either people move with technology, and it doesn't matter if you're a father or a grandfather, etc. Mm-hmm. Like, if you pay attention and you move with technology, you will understand. Mm-hmm. But the technology is developed for younger generations. Okay, so now that I've said that, how do you combine you know, security and ease of use? You do. So Stacks was an interesting story where Tony Fadell, the inventor of the iPod, joined Ledger and to design Stacks. Mm-hmm. And there has been that healthy tension between Tony, who's a product guy and, you know, wants product features and a product that is easy to use, and the Ledger team that is a security team. And it's like, that's not possible. That's not possible. We can't do that, etc. And so in the end, you make it work, and you make it work by saying, number one, there is zero compromise on security ever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, it's not even a discussion. We don't even open the discussion. If there is a flaw, or if there is a way, even if it's very difficult, that someone could get into the device, then it's a no-go. Then we have to change the design, we have to change the product, etc. So, but once you you pass that hurdle of zero compromise on security, then you try to develop products where basically you make the onboarding easy and the connectivity easy. These are two pain points that you're really trying to solve for. So I need to set up my bank account, I need to set up my wallet, I need to set up something, how easy it is. Mm-hmm. And by the way, coming back to your previous question, I'm like, oh, this shit is hard. I don't know. Like, you know, last time I tried to set up like an exchange account, it wasn't easy. You have to have your ID, you know, you need to understand the kind of levels, you know, so level one is like, okay, just one ID. Level two, you need two IDs, a proof of residence, mm-hmm. etc. Like, it's not so easy. Like, to register at a bank is not so easy either. Some make it like easier than others. Like Revolut has a very sleek service, but this is why they're super successful.
Yeah, you're right. Actually,
because they brought that into the market. So even in the old financial market, most of the UX UI are really bad. And so I would actually argue that what we're doing now, and especially with Stacks in terms of onboarding, is going to be flawless. And then in terms of connectivity, is like, okay, once I have that thing, like, what can I do with it? That's the second problem that you're trying to solve, and to make it as connected as possible. Think about the iPhone. Like, the iPhone was a hit because suddenly you could connect to the internet in a very easy manner.
I just want to take a quick second and tell you about one more podcast you have to check out if you're a fan of Success Story. It's Sales Evangelist, hosted by Donald Kelly, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. Each week, Donald interviews the world's best sales experts, successful sellers, sales leaders, and entrepreneurs who share their strategies to succeed in sales right now. He brings on Jeffrey Gittimer, Jill Conrath, Bob Berg, Guy Kawasaki. They share actionable insights and stories that will encourage, challenge, and motivate you to hustle your way to more revenue for your business. If you're somebody who's looking to take off in your sales career, if you are an entrepreneur who's looking to sell more, I think all of us are, go listen to Sales Evangelist wherever you get your podcasts. You know, you're walking through all the problems that you're solving for with Ledger, and I'm actually really curious, just as an example of a great CEO, how did you pivot from a background in marketing, advertising? How did you pivot into a crypto hardware company? I don't know how you exactly describe Ledger, but how do you make that pivot
successfully? Security company, yeah.
Security company. How do you do that successfully?
I think you can only do that successfully if, one, you do the switch when no one is looking.
That's fair.
Because if you try to do that switch in a highly competitive environment, like, it's almost impossible. But in 14, nobody was looking. Nobody cared. And so I joined thinking, okay, I've got time to learn. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had like 2, 3 years, maybe 4 where I could just work and learn, and my mistakes wouldn't be held against me, and nobody knew anyway, so it's fine not to know when nobody knows.
Yeah.
It's much harder to do a switch like this in Web3 right now. You're like, oh, you know, I was selling whatever yesterday, and now I want to get into crypto. Okay, it's more difficult. Like, you know, the market exists. There are big companies, etc. So you can still get in, but, you know. The second thing that you have to do is you have to put your ego in your pocket. Like, you go back all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
So when I left Criteo, people say to me, I was chief operating officer. I had, I don't know, like 800 or 900 people reporting to me, like something like a public company, etc. So it was good. And people say to me, oh my God, like, you know, the second you're out of the door with Criteo, like your phone is going to keep on ringing. Like, people will call you and offer mm-hmm. you a job, etc. So the phone never rang, zero, and not zero calls, but like the few calls that I got, like, were not for me. And so I was just like, shit. And so you have to be, and so then I figured that the only solution was to go back all the way down and work all my way up again.
Yeah.
And this is what I did. But again, for this, you need to have an ecosystem that is very, very new. So you can take as much space as possible. You can meet a lot of people, etc. And also, it's you have to be willing to start again from zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that, you know, when you have liquidity, some of the discussions I had in the early days were very unpleasant, when people were very mean to me. And sometimes you got the fuck you money. You're like, you know what? Like, I don't need to do this meeting.
Yeah.
You know, and but actually, I never say that. I always, like, you know, you suck it up, you shut up, like, you learn. Doesn't matter if people are, you know, talking down on you. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, what matters is the objective and the goal that you set for yourself.
I love that, though. That's a smart lesson, because I bet a lot of people with ego would approach it very differently. But that, it's, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Now you look back, you're like, all those choices I made were the right choices. Like, look at what you're doing now. Look at what you're building now. You know, you're truly on the bleeding edge of tech. You're changing the world. But when you have a major exit event, like, ego's already through the roof. You're like, I already fucking did this. I don't have to deal with this shit anymore.
And then you do.
And then, like, you do.
Oh, shit.
And you know, you're building out this company. You're new in it. Put the ego aside, learning everything. These are all really smart lessons. But you mentioned something else that it's a make or break for an entrepreneur, a CEO, or even a founder. It's bringing on the best talent. And in crypto in 2014, like you said, talent was tough. Yeah. So how did you get people in a security company? You can't compromise on talent. So how did you get the right people?
Well, it's just step-by-step process, really. And, you know, they have several phases, but, like, I think the first step was to really focus on the security talent.
Yeah.
And it was one of the reasons why Ledger is born in France, because when it comes to secure hardware and sort of embedded security operating system that run in hardware, etc., we have France is probably one of the hotspots for, you know, top developers when it comes to mm-hmm. that world. France is not the only country, of course. Like, you have Israel, you have China, Russia, etc. But it's more of a European thing. It's less of an American thing, like secure hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, like, you know, top talents there. So when you actually think about building a business, you need to think about, like, what's my edge? You know,
yeah.
if I start from Paris, like, you know, okay, the city is beautiful, but, you know, what else do we have? And you're like, okay, well, when it comes to secure hardware, we have the best talent. Okay, so you start with that, and you just start with security. And the first thing that we try to do is to establish, you know, security dominance, and to make sure that we really had that sort of nailed to the point where I think Ledger right now is the only company to have a hardware wallet that has not been opened by the dungeon. So the dungeon is our attack lab, and what we do is we take every product in the market, including ours, and we try to extract private keys. And we managed to do it with, you know, a bunch of wallets in the market, never with Ledger. It's impossible to extract private keys. To date, it's impossible to extract private keys from a Ledger. Not the same can be said from, you know, wallets that come from other vendors.
So I know there's a lot of, I'm going to use a very layman's term, hacks. And I think there was something in the news today that was like another wallet was compromised. I guess there's a trust wallet vulnerability.
Yeah. We find out.
So is that a symptom of having a wallet connected to the internet? Is there anything that can ever be secure that's connected to the internet, or is that a fallacy?
Yeah, your ledger can be connected to the internet.
But you can take it off? You can.
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
This is the whole thing. Like, because your private keys are in your ledger and in the secure element,
yeah,
then it's fine. You can leave it connected to the internet the whole day if you want.
So what happens with all these other vulnerabilities, exploits? How can
These are different because these are software wallets. So what happens if you use a software wallet is your software wallet is fundamentally broken because it sits on your phone and or your computer. You know, phone and computer.
Different hardware. It sits on hardware that wasn't meant for it.
Correct.
Okay.
And you know the zero-day exploits?
Yeah.
You know, there is a market for it. You can go online. It's not even a dark market. It's an open
explain
market.
It because,
explain yeah, zero-day exploit is you have hackers that all day long try to enter into systems. And what they do is usually they go through the operating system that has many holes. And listeners, like people that listen to this podcast, you know, you know this because you've been patching again your phone, your computer, your Chrome, your Firefox.
Yes,
Firefox.
Yeah.
You know, everything like so many times, and so you're patching them because there are vulnerabilities that have been found, and suddenly, oh my God, like now we need to patch them, but until they're patched, like it means that it's open. So basically, if the operating system is open, an attacker will go through the operating system, and everything that sits on top of the operating system is vulnerable. It's basically the door is open. There is nothing that you can do to shut it down. So there is no app that you can put on top of an operating system that is weak in terms of security that can be secure. And so therefore, if I gain access to your phone, and it's very easy, I just... you download the wrong app where there is a malware. Mm-hmm. If you got your coins in, I don't know, MetaMask or any software wallet that sits on your phone, your coins are gone in less than 30 seconds.
And
the malware would just like whoosh, take your private keys and they're gone. So
all you got to be is a target.
Yes. Oh, well, no, that's even easier. I'm just
talking. No, I know. I mean, but I'm saying so basically if anybody has soft, because there's a lot of software wallets out there.
Yes.
If somebody wants to go after you, if somebody knows.
It's gone. Easy.
That's scary as hell because there's a whole market. There's multi-billion dollars in companies that build software.
Oh yeah, but you can Google, you go on the Ledger Dungeon blog and there is a page. We can send it to you so you can put it like... There's a page where we show exactly that, like, you know, how we take like any software wallet in the market and how we can extract private keys in less than 30 seconds. And all it takes is a malware that is downloaded on your PC or your Mac or your phone. And we download malware every day. Like, you know, it's not crazy to think that you're going to download the malware. And especially if you're targeted, then it's even easier. It's like, hey, how are you? Look at that cute video. It's like, oh, this is fun. And then boom, voila, your coins are gone.
So I think a lot of this has to do with education because, I mean, I'm not ignorant to crypto and this industry, but I think a lot of people are even like less knowledgeable than me. Some people are obviously way more. But like the average user that uses software wallets, I'm pretty sure that if you ask, you know, five of my friends that have bought significant amount of Bitcoin or any other coin, MetaMask is fine. Everything is fine. No problem. I think that's no one really knows the exploit that can actually happen.
That's true.
I think that's a big education piece.
But what you'll see now is like most of these wallets, like, you know, they actually will tell you as a user, like if you want the best security, you know, use a ledger, pair your MetaMask with a ledger. MetaMask is actually saying this, which I think is good. And, you know, once you know that, then it's okay to decide for yourself. It's like, okay, this is the best security.
Yeah.
And it's not because your MetaMask is on your phone that your coins are necessarily gone like right away. Like you still need to download the malware or you still need to be targeted. But like the risk that they'll be gone gets much higher. And so then you have to decide for yourself. Like, you know, people will say, oh, but I only have one NFT and $50 on my MetaMask, so that's fine. Like, you know, I don't need to pair it with a ledger, which is probably fine. But the problem again with this is, you know, if someone breaks into your house and they only take the PlayStation, I mean, it's not bad in a sense, it's just a PlayStation, but still it fucking sucks. Like, you know, even if it's $50 or the PlayStation or one NFT, like I don't want anyone to come to my home and take my stuff.
It's just not a good feeling. It just means that you feel like someone's been in your shit.
Yeah, someone's been in your shit. And also today was $50 and so tomorrow is how much? And so therefore you cannot trust that system. I really think that you're right. There is a lot of education to be done. Like people need to realize that not your keys, not your coin. And so take your coins off exchanges. But also, if you use a software wallet, make sure to pair it with a hardware wallet to protect the private keys.
That's smart. Do you see, I'm curious where you're just looking towards the future. Do you see AI being incorporated as a malicious attack, running like hundreds of thousands of different possible vectors for attack at the same time using AI? Like, you see, today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free. Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod. The inclusion of AI to be a positive or negative, something that you have to understand as a CEO of a security company.
So it's definitely something that you have to understand, but if AI is used to attack, it can also be used to defend. Mm-hmm. And so it's always a game of attack versus defense. And so, you know, we are on the defensive side. And so we'll use every piece of technology that is available to make the defenses stronger. So there is a stream at Ledger right now, a strategic one, like to figure out, like, you know, how AI is going to impact us and, you know, what's interesting, etc. I can give you like a fun example. Like, AI is actually pretty good at spotting bugs in code. And so, you know, for smart contracts and everything, you know, it's a good way to quickly screen a contract and to see where there could be a problem. So typically we're going to use AI for that. But so will attackers. And so I think, you know, if the defense and attackers use AI in the same way, it sort of neutralizes itself. And if the defenders use AI in a better way, then it gives us an edge, etc. And so it's a cat and mouse problem.
But you have, but like as an organization involved, like you're already exploring it. That's probably the most important thing, to stay ahead.
Yeah, AI, but also, you know, quantum computing, etc. But there are things that are, you know, sort of true at some point. Like, typically, I get a lot of questions of quantum computing. Is like, oh, but when this happened, like, you know, Ledger is fucked. I'm like, yes, but if that was to happen like that, like, you know, suddenly there is quantum computing and and Ledger is fucked, I'm like, we got a bigger problem with nuclear weapons, like, you know.
That's valid too. what are some of the challenges that
But it's not going to happen like this. My point with quantum computing is, like, you know, it's attack, defense, etc. And so the day that quantum computing is really a thing, then, you know, defenses would have been
both sides have access to it. Both sides always have access to it. It's just being, as a leader of an organization, you just have to be on it, and you have to be including that in part of your security strategy, your engineering strategy. So you have like a whole research department that goes after this stuff too.
Yes.
What are some of, as a CEO of the security company, what are some of the challenges, some of the things that you want to take on in the future for Ledger? Like, where do you see your place in the crypto ecosystem?
Well, I think, the crypto ecosystem, but it's right to use crypto because for me, crypto is a bigger umbrella.
Correct.
And under you have cryptocurrency, you have eventually NFT, but you have everything that is your sort of digital lifestyle and, all the way to your identity, your passwords, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so, I think with the way that the world is going, people will need more security to connect online and, again, to sort of onboarding, security, onboarding and connectivity, this is the same problem, whether you're web one, web two, mm-hmm. web three, it's the same problem actually. So, from a user perspective, I think, Ledger will be your, digital lifestyle companion. If you want to connect your apps, if you want to think about Instagram for 1 second, how many people actually make a living through Instagram? And so when they do, of course, for them, it's a big problem if they get hacked. If someone get access to their account, they can lose a lot of money for a month, 2 months, mm-hmm. etc. It's very hard to rebuild a credibility, reputation after you've been hacked. This is the digital house that got, breached or robbed, And so I think in the future, people will need sort of more and more security to access things, and whether it's cryptocurrency, to share your identity, etc. And, Ledger has a huge role to play into this, but not just cryptocurrency, sort of everything else that is your digital lifestyle and the secrets that you need to protect.
I was going to say, again, you're leading this company and there's always concern about regulation and volatility, but that's over a very particular asset class.
Correct.
Very, very, very specific. So when you look at the future of Ledger, you don't want to have unknowns in a business as much as possible. You want to remove the unknowns, and regulation is a huge, question mark. I mean, it's country specific, but as a CEO, you want to build out a business that's you're future proofing yourself, and you go down all these different pathways. So what you're trying to accomplish in the future is this is the de facto security system for all these different online interactions that require some level of security.
Correct. Meaningful. Internally, we call them meaningful interactions.
Yeah.
And again, it's more of a, I had the question the other day of saying, but what if regulation, actually it was a question from a phone vendor. And it was just what if regulation hits you and, what are you going to do about it? I'm like, well, if regulation hits Ledger, means that the phones are next in line or maybe first in line. You can download anything on your phone. You can run a Bitcoin wallet directly on your phone.
And of course. Yeah.
So suddenly if you need to KYC AML everyone that's got a Bitcoin wallet, then you need to KYC AML everyone that buys a phone, a computer, et cetera, et cetera. So it becomes really bad in terms of a freedom. So I don't think he's gonna get there, but you're right. It's what we do is all about what we do. We don't really do it for business. Business is a good consequence of what we do. What we do is we do it for our users. And so, security and ease of use, that's our mission. We think it's very important, because without security, there is no freedom. Mm-hmm. So online freedom only exists if you can be secure with your secrets. And if you cannot protect your secrets, then, it's not just a problem of crypto and Ledger. It's a more fundamental problem than that.
Well, I think that's a huge problem right now. I think more than ever. Even in Web 2, the amount of people that get phished and get hacked all the time, right?
100%.
So now you just have access to... Now people are trying to store their whole lives online. A lot of personal information.
Yeah, completely.
And so when do you think will be the point where Ledger starts to actually help people outside of its first primary use case?
Well, we already started. There is an app for password, there is an app for 2FA and Fido, etc. Mm-hmm. So we're doing sort of baby steps, but we will further accelerate, early 24. And second half of 23 is to get Stax live and, sort of various other pieces of the software. And I think why we do that, the second half of 23 will be to work also on identity, FIDO2,
yeah,
password manager, etc. But that will be for 2024 release.
Because you even see like what's that that password what's that password app that just got LastPass? They also got compromised to some degree.
Yeah, well,
right. So
people don't realize there's one book that everyone needs to read is the book is called "This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends."
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of the lady that wrote the book, but it's easy to find. It's easy to buy on Amazon, and you know this tells you the story about like online hacking, cyber attacks, etc. You know there are some. I'll give you the short version of the story, but like there was a criminal organization, hackers organization, that got exposed recently. They got exposed, and so people should know that. And it's just one organization. Organizations like this, there are plenty.
Mm.
They have 2,500 people on the payroll.
That's insane.
And they have 10,000 auxiliaries. Okay, so this is a company that is...
This is a full company.
Yeah.
2,500.
Four times the size of Ledger in terms of number of people. and if you count the auxiliaries, like, you know, more. And their only job is to hack the shit of everything that they can find. And this is why, like, you know, phishing attacks, etc., people are like, oh my God, like, you know, they are very dangerous, those phishing attacks, because the guys that are behind them are very sophisticated. It's not just a kid in his garage, you know,
yeah,
trying to fuck people over. They are like serious organizations with very talented people whose job is to do that.
Do you collaborate with other organizations, with government, to make sure that like your security engineering is at the highest levels? Because you're a private company and you're competing against, again, an organization that has 4x minimum the people that you do.
Yeah, so we collaborate with a bunch of people in our industry. Like, this is what the dungeon does. This is what our cybersecurity team does, etc. So we have a lot of collaborations with various other teams from the private sector in our world. And so that's good, and that's working well, because you can sort of collectively, you know, we can collectively protect ourselves.
That's what I'm thinking. If you're turning into more of a security company, because this is not just, it's not a rebrand, but it's like an evolution of Ledger, right?
Well, you know, I think the why Ledger exists was always the same. And, you know, Ledger at heart was always a security company. And now, you know, the how you pitch it to do your latest series is a different question. And also sometimes people, even though the why has always been the same, they want to see, you know, the what and the how. And and we've been pitching the what and the how for a long time. Like, you know, hardware wallet is, you know, the what. But the business is much more like security. If you take the why, like, you know, from a very high level, the business is really security. Like, we're really pushing the boundaries of security,
mm-hmm,
whether it's cryptocurrency or not, whether it's a hardware wallet or not. Like, what we're doing is much more fundamental than this. And I'm not saying that the hardware is not cool. I mean, it's a great piece of technology that you need to have if you want to protect your secrets. And we also have like an enterprise division that does something very similar for enterprise, and that also works very well. But it's true that what we're doing is much more fundamental, and we have always been a security company. Yes.
I love that. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wanted to speak about, things that you're working on now, things that are top of mind for Ledger, for yourself?
No, maybe one thing, and we can wrap up with that if you want. Like, you know, to me, I feel that, because you're talking about education and people talk about education, but, you know, self-education is also very important. Like, when you enter into a world, you need to... And this is the story of how I joined Bitcoin, etc. Mm-hmm. You need to educate yourself. Like, you know, there is no one that you can blame in the end for your lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an investor, if you want to play with the coins, if you want to enter this world for one reason or another, it is your obligation to, you know, self-educate yourself. There are many ways of doing it. There are hundreds of books that have been written on this.
Yeah.
There is a top five for sure, and not just on crypto and Bitcoin and what it is, but also on, like, you know, what is value. And, you know, I read many books like this when I entered the space. to understand what value is, which is very interesting because most people don't understand what value is. They think that value necessarily have something to back it up, which is not true. Gold has nothing to back up the fact that it's gold. It has certain properties, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, now money doesn't have even gold to back it up. So
correct. So this is the thing. And, you know, and when it comes to enterprise, I think every CEO has the obligation now to look in crypto, and every CEO that runs an exchange has the obligation to look deep into, like, how do I run my security, and not do what has been done so far, which is, oh, that's good enough. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's not good enough. Like, you need to be rock solid, 100% sure, etc. Because although, you know, FTX is a fraud, and I think it is, FTX was not crypto, still it does hurt crypto. And so if the next big exchange is going down because of a lack of sort of security, a lack of governance, all of these things that can be easily fixed today, now the technology exists, you know, I think it's not a service that we're giving to our users in general. And people should focus probably less on the top line and sort of more on the fundamentals. And the fundamental of this industry, you know, this industry doesn't exist if you don't build it on something that is extremely secure. And if you don't like Ledger, it's fine. Like, there are other vendors out there, like, you know, use them, etc. But, like, do, you know, I think for any CEO that that is running a company in this space, or think that he's going to run a company in this space, you know, think about the security of your users first. Like, you know, that's what's necessary.
I love this. Where should people go to learn more about what you're working on, all the socials? Where do people want to go to follow you? And
So ledger.com, then, you know, Twitter. Our YouTube channel is pretty cool. We have a lot of great content.
If they want to learn, they can go there.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah. And we have the Ledger Academy. But basically, go to ledger.com and, you know, for... You know,
what about yours? Where do they...
Rabbit hole.
Where do they go find you?
On Twitter. And it's cool because on Twitter, I don't understand that thing where people complaining that they're gonna have to pay $8 to get the blue mark.
I don't know.
Pay
$8. It's $8, people.
It's $8. And also, it's a good business model. Like, you know, praise Elon Musk.
I actually thought it was a very good business model. I come from a software background. Yeah. So if you get $8 monthly recurring revenue across a couple hundred million users, good for you.
Yeah, it's great. And people want it. That's why they complain so much. So pay. Pay up.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, so mine is the only one to have the little blue check because I pay.
Yeah.
And also have a little Ledger logo next to the blue check.
Did you get the, yeah? So you have the affiliation with Ledger now?
Way.
Yeah.
So that's great because we have like so many scammers.
Yeah, no doubt. Crypto is bad.
It's really bad. I've got at least like 10 running right now on Twitter, but the only one to have the blue mark and the little Ledger logo is me. So
good.
That's who you follow. I think it's _ P Gautier, GAUTITHIER. Yeah, on Twitter.
Okay, perfect. Last question I ask everybody. You've had a great career. It's gone through several different businesses. At this point in your life, what does success mean to you?
That's a tough one for the end. Well, success, what it would mean to me now is to, you know, build, to make Ledger a company that is very transformative to the world. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't finish on what I was saying about Criteo. The problem that once you've built a company like Criteo, like, you know, what's going to be your next company? And so you got two problems. Was I lucky or was I good? And if I'm good, like, you know, I can do it again, but I wanted to be bigger. And so I sort of thought about that and I was like, you know, be bigger and more meaningful. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I love advertising. Not everybody loves advertising, but I quite like advertising. I think it's a very human thing, profoundly human thing, but you're not curing cancer. Like, you know,
yeah.
And of course, with Ledger, we're not curing cancer either, per se, but we are solving for a much bigger problem, a much more fundamental problem, which is, you know, in one word, it's freedom. If you cannot protect your secrets online, and if you cannot own your secrets online, then you are not free. The world that we're in right now is a dangerous world, because if you only become a number into a big online property that is controlled by someone else, then you're not free by definition. And mm-hmm. And this is a society that we don't want. And so it's not so much in terms of business, my ambition, but it's like in terms of impact. Like, you know, I hope that Ledger is going to have a huge impact on the world and how people and companies, but like how we bring security to this digital world. And, you know, it's severely lacking right now. And, you know, like we said earlier, without security, there's no freedom. And so if we can bring digital freedom to the world, and so freedom, I think that's my ultimate goal.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save.